found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. The Maria Sanchez Show. Current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, entertainment. Miss a day? Download the podcast at LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the MariaSanchezShow.com. Heard every weekday morning at 9 o'clock live at LATalkRadio.com. And then later on in the day via download, on demand, podcasts, iTunes at MariaSanchezShow.com and the MariaSanchezShow.com. Thank you so much for joining us. It is Friday, May 31st. Last day of the week, last day of the month, and June gloom starts tomorrow. So before we get into our guests, we've got another compelling program. We try to focus on hope and inspiration and good as often as possible. And our first guest will fit right into that. And it's a traumatic subject because we're going to be talking about some brain disorder injuries, and even it can affect people who have had a stroke, chemotherapy, exposure to toxic substance, and even healthy brain functioning, how we can enhance that. So she's going to be speaking with us about what they do to rehabilitate the brain function in folks who have had trauma, and also then for those of us who are healthy and want to enhance our brain function, what we can do about that. So it's hope, hope, hope. So that's awesome. And then our other guest this hour is a woman who actually is the owner of an acting studio here in Southern California in the Los Angeles area. She's got, her former clients have included Adam Sandler, Jason Lee, Giovanni Ribisi, Ellen DeGeneres, to name a few. But she has an event going on that's happening next weekend. Wanted to help expose that to you in case you're thinking about a career in that regard, because she has an alternative to the traditional approach of method acting. And we'll, with that conversation will ensue later on. But yesterday we had a gentleman on the program who was responding to the tornado disasters in Moore, Oklahoma, and he kind of gave us an on-the-floor idea of what the damage and destruction looks like. Well, I spoke with him later in the day, touching base with him, and he said there was a 60% chance of a tornado happening again yesterday, and that is true today too. So if you knew that there was a 60% chance of something, now he's there professionally because he does damage assessment, I don't know that I would hang around. And he said, so I'm not going anywhere. He's staying in the motel that he's staying in. He said, do you have a basement here? And they're like, no, what we do is we go into the banquet room. And he said to me, I'm not going into the banquet room. I'm getting in my car and getting out. And I was like, no, you can't do that. They say that's wrong. But he says that they have a whole system where they can tell, you can get up to 5 to 15 minutes of notice. And he says, so I've got a north-south egress, and I've got an east-west egress. And so today in the news is that up to a dozen tornadoes touched down yesterday in Arkansas, as well as three in Oklahoma. And the National Weather Service was sending teams there to survey the aftermath of the damage, and that more storms are expected today. The agency's Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma, which is where our guest yesterday was staying, which is near Moore, Oklahoma, said large hail and tornadoes are likely today, and that the areas at greatest risk include Oklahoma City, Tulsa, and Joplin, Missouri, where the second deadliest American tornado on record hit just two years ago. So Thursday's tornadoes all appeared to be much less dangerous than the top-of-the-scale EF5 storm that struck Moore, Oklahoma on May 20th, and the 17-mile path. And what he's going to do is he's going to visit with us next week to talk more about the numbers, because the Superstorm Sandy caused $38 billion in damage, And this more tornado caused, they said, $5 billion of damage. But he was saying the swath that it did that in, if you multiplied that by what's the area that Superstorm Sandy hit, it's much, much greater. And that isn't getting publicized at all, so we'll go into that. Now, there was a local story that made national news, and that's about the pit bulls that killed a woman jogger. Yesterday, the owner of the pit bulls was charged with murder. Alex Jackson, age 29, was charged with murder after DNA tests on his dogs found blood on their muzzles and coats that matched that of Pamela DeWitt, 63, who died after being bitten 150 to 200 times by his four pit bulls. This is the first dog mauling case that anybody can recall since the 2001 trial, and that involved a San Francisco husband and wife and their 140-pound Presta Canario, who escaped and killed a neighbor of theirs in their apartment hallway. In that case, the woman who owned the dog, Marjorie Knoller, she got a 15 years to life sentence after a jury found her guilty of second-degree murder, and her husband, Noel, was convicted of involuntary manslaughter. So the warrant against Alex Jackson yesterday charges him with owner negligence of an animal causing death, and he's also facing charges of growing marijuana. So he's going to be he's scheduled for arraignment today. He's being held on $1 million bail. And they say these dog bite-relating fatalities are rare. There's only 30 to 35 each year, but nevertheless. But since January of this year, authorities had received at least three other reports of his dogs attacking other people. So hours after the incident, sheriff's deputies went to his home with a search warrant and took away eight dogs, six pit bulls, and two mixed breeds. Not all the dogs were licensed, spayed, or neutered as required by the county and the state law. But they appear to be still alive. So we'll follow up on that, because in general, if something has killed another, I think they put them down. Now, we have a pet correspondent that visits with our program when that is in the news. And we sent that story to her. Nina Rubin is her name. So we'll get into more details about that early next week. Also in the news, the spelling bee was the last 2 days, and it's the Scripps National Spelling Bee that has been around since 1927. We mentioned it when it started, which was Wednesday and Thursday. One of the reasons that we mentioned it is, one, of course, it's national news. It involves spellers from all 50 states, as well as other countries and the District of Columbia. Because it involves initially 11 million spellers at some point. So from those 11 million spellers, it got winnowed down to 281. They were ranged in age from 8 to 14, 8 years old, and a national phenom. We have a Word of the Month correspondent on the Maria Sanchez Show. He visits with us. He's the editor of Merriam-Webster.com, the online dictionary. He visits with us at the beginning of each month to talk about the most searched words in the month prior. The Merriam-Webster.com gets 1.5 billion, billion with a B, hits a year. It's about 100 million hits a month, so we're talking about a staggering group of numbers. So he's visiting with us next Tuesday, but he actually was a part of this. He's in an email, he told me this week that he addressed the spellers and their parents on Monday night. And then he's staying there where they had the event, which was outside of New York. And he said that he was stopped and approached for autographs by all these spelling kids, which I think is fabulous. So it's a 13-year-old boy from Bayside Hills, New York. He won the spelling bee. And by the way, it was broadcast live on ESPN last night by correctly spelling natal. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. It's knadel, K-N-A-I-D-E-L, which is a kind of dumpling, and it's a German-derived Yiddish word. This young man finished third in the contest twice before, each time stumbling on German words. So his quote is, "I thought the German curse had turned into a German blessing. It means I can retire on a good note." He wants to become a quantum physicist. He defeated 10 other finalists. This summer, when asked what he's going to do on his vacation, he's going to study physics, and he is going to use the $30,000 cash prize for college, so $30,000. So finalists, some of the words that they were eliminated on, and I'll do my very best to pronounce these correctly, if you get a chance and you are so inclined, you go to Merriam-Webster.com, again, no investment on my behalf in them other than that I use it, they have a place where you can click and hear somebody pronounce the word, which I love, pathognomonic Doryline, Melikotan, and Kaburi were some of the words that eliminated the finalists. And this year, for the first time since 1927, the contest included tests on vocabularies. So they said that the reason they wanted to do that because the Scripps National Spelling Bee has a commitment to deepening knowledge of the English language. And here's a water cooler talk thing. Since 1999, 11 of the 15 winners have been of South Asian origin, including the last six. So, and here's a great story. A well-preserved mammoth carcass has been discovered in Siberia. Researchers found a 10,000-year-old female mammoth buried in ice off the coast of northeast Russia. And what's interesting about this? Blood. The blood was in the mammoth carcass. And they're saying this is going to be amazing for us in terms of science. So this is the first time mammoth blood has been discovered, and it's the best preserved mammoth in the history of paleontology. And they haven't moved it yet for fear of damaging it, and they're going to continue to do research on it, and we're going to find out more about our predecessors. More news to get to, which we will do when we take a break from our interview, but we're going to be visiting now with Dr. Kirsten Willemeyer, and she's with Amen, and she's going to speak with us. Good morning. It's Maria Sanchez. You're live and on the air. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Maria. How are you?
I'm terrific. And tell us before we get into your message of hope, which and the NFL study, as well as we mentioned that what you do there at Amen also can help people who have been affected by stroke, chemotherapy, or exposure to toxic substances. What is Amen all about?
Well, the Amen clinics, we are a psychiatric clinic, so we see children and adults who suffer from anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, ADD, brain injuries. So we're unique in that we use brain imaging combined with the diagnostics to really target treatment protocols for our patients.
So brain imaging, because some of the things that you mentioned, like, say, ADD or ADHD, you're getting more of a scientific approach to it as opposed to somebody saying, oh, well, you're distracted or you're fidget or you can't sit still or something and you must have ADD.
That's correct. So we give a DSM-4 diagnostic. So we have a way to measure it sort of using a pencil and paper questionnaire, as well as people saying, I feel fidgety or I can't focus or concentrate. Our brain imaging study is combined with a specific test called a Connors Continuous Performance Test, which allows us to measure somebody doing a focused task while we're doing the brain imaging. So it's we like to think of it as a very comprehensive way of diagnosing ADD in the brain.
So again, science and not necessarily just personal opinion interpretation.
Correct. It is actually showing how your brain is functioning while you're doing a focus test. And if we see that the brain is functioning, the frontal lobes are really what we're looking at. So in ADD, when people can't focus, we say their frontal lobe function goes down, and the brain imaging shows that quite elegantly. So we're able to better detect it in the brain and then treat it accordingly.
So can you mention the NFL study? And the reason that I came to know of Amen Clinics is because a listener who's a former NFL player who knows a mutual friend who passed away 2 weeks ago from a heart attack said that he's convinced that there was some of this going on because of the emotional issues like depression and I don't know what else he mentioned. So I thought, well, okay, let's get some more information. So maybe you can tell us what you're doing with the NFL players.
Oh, I would be happy to. So back in 2009 is when we started our NFL study, and it really came out of an NFL player coming to our clinic. His name's Anthony Davis. He was a former College Hall of Fame running back at USC. Mm-hmm. And we looked at his brain. He saw significant damage. And he had actually come to us because his colleagues that he had played with in the NFL were really struggling with memory issues and very depressed. So when he saw his brain looking the way it did, he said, I need your help. So we had put Anthony on a brain rehab protocol, and he had done so well, he said, I need you to help, you know, my friends. So that's how our study got started. And we went to the Los Angeles chapter of the NFL Retired Players Association meeting, recruited 30 players for our study. And essentially the study was putting the players through an Amen Clinic evaluation, which entailed a brain SPECT image, which looks at the function and activity of your brain, something called a QEEG, where we measure your brain wave activity. We gave them two cognitive tests, one that measures the amount of dementia in the brain and one that measures overall memory function. And then we looked at the results. And Maria, I have to tell you, after we worked with the first 30 players and saw how damaged their brains were, number one, we said we need to do a larger study. So we actually worked with 100 players. And the second thing was we need to help these guys. We can't just study the trauma in the brain. We need to put them on a protocol. So after putting the first 100 people through the study, the numbers that came out were staggering. So first we saw decrease brain function globally throughout the brain. We had 48% of our players were obese, 30% of our players struggled with sleep apnea, which is when you're sleeping, you can't get enough oxygen to the brain. Mm-hmm. And we tell patients who come to our clinic, sleep apnea doubles your risk for Alzheimer's. 28% of our players had depression, 19% of our players had dementia, and 81% of our players had issues with the ADD or just trouble focusing. So to us, that's an epidemic. Do you want me to go into the brain rehab protocol there?
Yes, please. So okay. Because so you've just shared the bad news. And obviously,
that's the bad news.
Folks,
yes,
who are listening who are not NFL players or ever be, but anybody who participates in any sport where your head might be hit or you might fall, this would apply to. So
absolutely.
Be it rugby or soccer or lacrosse or, you know, high school football or obviously college sports.
Absolutely. You've run the gamut. Yes. So what we did with our players, well, first we put everybody on a weight loss program because obesity actually damages the brain. Fat is an inflammatory organ, and it actually produces these free radicals, which can damage cell membranes. So mm-hmm. Anybody who's overweight, you know, we need to help get the weight down. We recommended sleep apnea evaluations for all of the players to get that treated. But the most important part is we put everybody on a series of brain-directed nutrients. So there were three supplements all of them got. And we did supplements because we were funding the study and we wanted to make this as easy as possible and we wanted to do it naturally without the use of medications. So the three supplements were a comprehensive brain-directed nutrient multivitamin that we made called Neurovite Plus. We put them on a high dose of omega-3, so the fish oils.
And what do you mean by high dose?
High dose, 5.6 grams per day.
Okay.
And then we put them on a brain formula that we designed called Brain and Memory Power Boost. And that was designed to boost blood flow to the brain, to increase the neurotransmitters that help with memory. And then it has plenty of antioxidants, which help to protect the neurons. And then for individual players, we also help treat their anxiety, depression, dementia. But really, the first part of the program was supplement-based only. And we put the players on the supplements for 2 to 6 months. And then we had them come back in for a follow-up. And the follow-up results were so encouraging. So the first 30 players we tested had improvements in memory. So 69% of them had improvements in memory, 53% had improved attention, 38% had improved mood and motivation, and 25% had improvements in sleep. But we didn't want to stop there. So after we did the first part of the program, those who needed additional help, so we looked at their brain scans, and if we still saw areas of low blood flow, we then recommended hyperbaric oxygen chambers.
Mm-hmm.
And are you familiar with that?
Do you know, funny that you mention it. My father has been going to hyperbaric treatments 2 hours a day for the past 2 months to help with wound healing from cancer treatments.
That is beautiful. I fell in love with using hyperbaric oxygen treatments, and I will tell you, we had not used them in our clinic prior to this study. But the damage we had seen in the players was so great that we decided to actually study how the chambers worked and how they influenced brain function. And we found that players who went in for a series of 40 treatments of hyperbaric oxygen had beautiful brains. And the hyperbaric oxygen works by helping to regrow blood vessels in the brain. And ultimately, after you do those 40 treatments, you'll have better blood flow, and more blood flow means more oxygen to the brain, which means those neurons will be literally saved.
So that may be, now, since my father is, what happened is that he had malignant melanoma on his shins,
okay,
and they radiated it, and it took the skin off.
Yes.
And so he's got these wounds, and because he's 83 and it's in the extremities, they're not healing.
Right. Right.
So they put him in with this hyperbaric treatment to help with the healing. So the byproduct is his brain's going to be better too, I guess.
It is. It's beautiful because the hyperbaric chambers can actually bring the oxygen to places where blood vessels don't go. It literally forces it into those areas. So it's been used for wound healing for decades. And only now are people really using it for improving brain function. So as we say, people have had chemotherapy, stroke, again, wound healing, traumatic brain injury, we put them in the hyperbaric chambers. And you don't have to do it forever. You know, typically you do 40 treatments, then you can take some time off, do another 40. And I've recommended it for patients who have Parkinson's and Alzheimer's.
Now, Dr. Willemeyer, the treatments, 40, is that an hour, or what's the length or duration do you suggest?
Yeah, it's typically an hour at 100%. It's a 100% partial pressure oxygen, and it's 1.3 atmospheres. So there's specific protocols that they can use, but that's what we found is the best to really initiate the blood vessel growth.
So somebody's listening, and they've got a malady that you've mentioned, including Alzheimer's and dementia and stroke or whatever. Do you have to have a prescription to get access to a hyperbaric chamber?
You do.
Okay.
You do need a prescription. We actually have a chamber at the Amen Clinics, and if people wanted to come, if they were concerned about their brain function, they can get an evaluation. We write the prescriptions, and we have one on site. But there are also private clinics that you can go to. I've helped a lot of our NFL players who live in cities where there are no Amen Clinics get to a facility.
And the as far as the normal, if you say normal, because you mentioned
a
healthy person, is that something that you would suggest for folks who do not have maladies?
Well, you know what's interesting, Maria? That's why a lot of times we'll have people get brain scans and they'll think they're healthy, but maybe at some point in their life they were exposed to toxic mold. Or there's all kinds of things that can happen in the brain that will decrease blood flow over time. So what I would recommend is if you're healthy, you may want to get your brain scan. If it shows areas of low perfusion, then hyperbaric oxygen is going to be a good alternative for you.
And
just to get that blood flow up.
When you say brain scan,
mm-hmm.
what's the name? Is it MRI or?
Oh, it's a SPECT, a brain SPECT scan, which is focused on measuring activity patterns in the brain and blood flow. And the beauty of SPECT versus MRI, so MRI looks at the anatomy of the brain,
mm-hmm.
and SPECT looks at the function of the brain. So a lot of times people will get an MRI and their brain will look beautiful because the structures are still there. The SPECT can sort of predict the damage that might happen on an MRI, you know, decades before. So say you have somebody who has Alzheimer's in the family, and you come in and get a SPECT image just as a preventative to see, am I going to get it? Typically, we can see low blood flow in the area of the brain, which is called the parietal lobes, where we classically see Alzheimer's. We can see it 10 years before you will get symptoms.
Oh, my.
So that's where SPECT can be a very elegant way of helping you be preventative in sort of future issues.
And when you say SPECT, is it S-P-E-C-T?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
S-P-E-C-T.
So, and I'm thinking to myself, because I played sports, but it was volleyball and basketball, and, you know,
yes.
I'm thinking, okay, so that. And then now, as we're speaking, I'm recalling that I was in a violent traffic collision with my family, and I sat in the front seat, and this is in the days before seatbelts. And then snow skiing once, I took a jump and leaned too far forward and landed headfirst on my skis. And
oh, no.
They were going to... Yeah, they were talking about drilling into my brain to release the blood that had been pulling and
wow.
stuff. All of a sudden now I'm thinking, I've remained unscathed. It's like, no, Maria. And that happened like 40 years ago. So,
it's so interesting because a lot of people have had head injuries. I was an equestrian and I showed horses for 10 years and I've fallen off hundreds of times, so I'm not immune to this either. And when I first started working at the clinic, I had gotten my brain scanned, and it actually looked pretty good. So not everybody who's had head injuries, you know, is going to have damage to the brain, but a lot of times some people do. So if you're having symptoms or you're starting to get a foggy memory, you know, these are signs that you may want to get it checked out. And as a preventative for you, Maria, that's where the supplements that I just recommended for the NFL players,
mm-hmm.
those are things that people can take, and it will help boost blood flow to the brain. Because I studied them not just in the NFL players, and we published papers in peer-reviewed journals, but we just finished doing a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial using those three supplements in healthy people. And we demonstrated through our imaging and through cognitive tests that even healthy individuals can have better brain function when taking the supplements. So that's sort of the gold standard of how to, you know, how you test things and show that they're effective.
Now, Dr. Willemeyer, are those supplements particular to AMEN clinics?
They are.
And do you need a prescription to consume them?
You do not.
Okay. And I'm assuming they're available on your website?
They're available on the website.
Mm-hmm. And your web address?
Is www.amenclinics.com.
And just for our listeners, it's as the prayer, A-M-E-N.
A-M-E-N. Yeah, it's like the prayer.
Yeah.
Exactly.
.com. And you have clinics aside from your Newport Beach one that we're speaking to you at?
We do. We have six clinics. We've got one in San Francisco. We've got one in Bellevue, Washington. We've got our Newport Beach clinic. And then on the East Coast, we're in Atlanta. We're in Reston, Virginia, and we're in New York City.
And do you have to be referred to you, or can somebody just walk up and say, I'd like to avail myself of the facilities and what you have to offer?
Oh, anybody is welcome.
And how did you start? The AMEN clinics, how did they begin and why?
How did I get into the AMEN clinic?
Not you specifically, but AMEN itself.
Oh, Dr. AMEN was a psychiatrist, and he was working at Walter Reed Medical Center. And one of his mentors introduced him to using SPECT imaging to help a particular patient who was clinically depressed, and she wasn't able to get over the depression. So every kind of medication and treatment they were trying just wasn't working. Well, when they did the imaging, they found that she had a large cyst in a specific area of the brain. And without having done that imaging and addressing the cyst, they would never have been able to figure out how to properly treat her symptoms of depression. So Daniel had been practicing for about 10 years as a psychiatrist, and then he said, I need to add brain SPECT imaging into my clinic. So he's been doing it for over 20 years, and we've amassed a database of over 77,000 scans. So we're very well versed in using the imaging modalities, particularly with people who are really struggling with psychiatric issues.
So you're treating you're treating the symptoms instead of medicating and hoping that people will be coddled into feeling better. You're actually treating the science of the brain.
Right. Well, because what ends up happening, the Amen Clinics tends to see a lot of patients who've already seen other clinicians and they're just not getting better. So our typical patient has seen four doctors. They've got an average of four diagnoses and they've taken on average six medications. They come walking through our doors just frustrated and they need answers. And that's where adding the brain imaging can really make a difference. Because I can give you a very tangible example. Depression can come in many forms, and a lot of times patients will come in and say, I'm depressed. If we look at a brain image, we can see, does your depression need a stimulating antidepressant as a treatment or a classic antidepressant? So we're able to really tailor medication to your brain type. And I'll tell you, Maria, we're really big on doing natural things first. So we would probably, for most patients, try all of the natural alternatives. And then if those aren't working, we'll then choose the best medications that really fit your brain type.
I love all of that because I'm a huge homeopathic person. And then I went to India 2 years ago and I came back with gastric issues. And for 6 weeks, I tried all, probiotics and stuff. Finally went to my medical doctor and they did a stool sample and I had Giardia, which... You need to solve with medicine, So I get that there's an Eastern-Western kind of balance, if you will.
Absolutely. And we find that a lot of our patients get better with natural supplements. And, we use the hyperbaric oxygen chamber. We have something called neurofeedback, which is a non-medication way to literally retrain the way the neurons in your brain communicate with one another. We did that with the football players as well who had the brain trauma. The areas of low function, we were able to use neurofeedback to boost those connections to help get the function going. So we're really adamant about, holding your hand. I mean, a lot of the players that I worked with 3 years ago, they still work with me. So we kind of think of patients who come to our clinics, you're with us for life.
Mm. Nice. And not necessarily in a dependent way, but just as
but
a partnership.
No, we're here if you need us.
Right.
It's almost, we actually are doing an outcome study on all of the patients that walk through our door. So everyone gets called at 6 weeks, 3 months, and 6 months. How are you doing? Can we help you? Are the medications or supplements you're taking, are they working? And we published a study on the first 500 patients that came through our clinics and actually measured their outcome using very standardized methods and found that 75% of the people who come to our clinics got better. And we continue to do that as a quality control because we feel it's really important to stay connected with our patients and to really help them have better lives.
Well, I am so grateful that we've had this conversation and also to our listener who suggested that I do the outreach in regards to the Amen Clinics.
Well, I'm grateful, too. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for your time and for your knowledge and for what you're doing.
You're so welcome.
And have a great weekend.
Thank you. Same to you, Maria.
Thank you so much. Dr. Kristen Willemeyer, Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-E-N, with the Amen Clinics. And again, not an endorsement or an investment or anything. I try and keep making that disclaimer so you know that I don't have any skin in the game. I'm all about information. I am a curious student of life. And so if you've got something that you'd like us to investigate, please feel free. Contact information is at mariasanchezshow.com and themariasanchezshow.com and also on latalkradio.com. So you can get me any way you like. And the interesting thing about what the story is not only was there knowledge, but there was hope, and including not just depression and stroke and chemotherapy and head injuries and toxic substances, but memory issues and keeping us functioning healthy. So I think after I remembered those two severe head injuries that I had, I might actually go look more into this for myself for the what does she call it? I'm going to repeat it again. She called it a SPEC images, where they identify biomarkers. And by the way, they've been dealing with suicide issues too. So if you know of somebody who needs help, I suggest that you call them or somebody along those lines. Our next guest is Lynette McNeil. She's the owner of the Lynette McNeil Studio, and she is going to be speaking with us about an event that she's having that's open
studio.
To the public. Hi, Lynette. Good morning. It's Maria Sanchez. You're live on the program.
Good morning, Maria.
Thank you for taking your time, and I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about your alternative to the traditional method acting in your approach to acting. And at the top of the program, I mentioned that some of your former students have included Adam Sandler, Jason Lee, Giovanni Ribisi, and Ellen DeGeneres, to name a few. And before we get into the event that we wanted to help promote for you, can you speak to folks out there who may have had an inkling or may have had a dream or may still want to pursue acting, how your approach differs from the traditional methodology?
Right. Well, there are some schools that subscribe to method acting, which is where you're trying to access past emotional memory or past painful emotional incidents. And my approach is that an actor can create anything he wants with his imagination, and he doesn't have to access those past painful incidents. He's an artist, and he can bring emotional depth and humor and all the layers he wants as he's able to understand that human being and his circumstances.
So we
all arrive with our life experiences intact, the good, the bad, and the ugly. They're there. We don't have to go back and start scrounging around for them and try to replace what a character might be feeling with something from our own past. If what we're trying to do is be connected and be present and there in the moment with that other character, then trying to access something from the past really is a contradiction, because it takes you out of the moment to get back into your own life instead of being there as another human being, creating the life of the character.
Now, that makes sense to me, because taking you out of the moment, you just gave the brilliant example in that regard. So if somebody, I mean, how does one become an actor? I mean, I know some folks, they want to get famous, or they see movie stars and they want to be rich or whatever. But
right.
A person who's pure in their pursuit of acting, what does that look like? How does that come about?
In other words, there's a sequence of steps. So if you say, this is just in me and I want to do this more than anything else and I have to do this, then you need to train. Because the most brilliant of actors, I would say 95 to 98% of them have studied. And that includes Robert De Niro and Al Pacino and every great actor that you've ever seen on the screen. Meryl Streep, they've all studied. So you start by learning your craft. You've got to know what you're doing. It looks glamorous. It looks easy when you watch it on the screen, because these actors are so finely tuned, they make it look effortless.
Mm-hmm.
But you have no idea the amount of care and study and training and thought that's gone into that work to make it look so seamless.
And what does training look like?
Well, training means that you need to find a good place to study, where they encourage you to, you know, use your imagination and to understand thoroughly the human condition. And that means you get yourself on a path where you're in a class on a regular basis. And as you begin to study and you begin to know what you're doing and you understand what's going to be required of you when you go to audition, because that does include a little different skill set. You have to first know your craft. You have to first really know what it means to be an actor. And then you need to know, when I go into the audition room, there are certain skills I need to have in order to be able to deliver this audition in the best, most effective way. So as you're developing, there comes that moment where it's time to get headshots. It's time to start seeking representation. It's time to start submitting yourself for parts.
And I have a son who graduated from USC, and his minor is theater arts, but that's really what he wanted to do. But he's also pragmatic, and as he says, I don't want to wait tables till I'm 35 or 50 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But one of his biggest what would I say, holdbacks, or he can't take the rejection. And I said to him, that's like 95% of it is the no's.
Right. Right. Well, it's just that is part of that business. You could be the most talented actor that they saw. They can see that you are unbelievably talented. But if you don't quite fit what they're looking for mm-hmm. in terms of how they see that particular character, mm-hmm. then it doesn't happen. And that can be a disappointment for sure. But if you understand that if you're short, and dark, and they're looking for someone very tall, very thin, and blonde, it doesn't happen to be about your talent. It happens to be about a quality or a look or something else. That doesn't mean that they're just looking for a type, but it does come down to a lot of different things at the end of the day.
Well, and so, you know what's funny, yeah. Lynette, if somebody's listening and that they don't know the industry at all, they mm-hmm. what they should need to understand, too, is that you don't get the phone call unless you got the part. And since that's one out of whatever against whom you were competing, in other words, somebody doesn't call and say, I'm sorry you didn't get the part, and here's the reason why. You were too short,
right.
too dark, too young, too whatever.
It doesn't happen.
Right.
No, it doesn't happen.
So you got to figure it out kind of on your own. And it's you're making stabs in the dark. You don't know because you don't know what they were looking for other than what's
right.
in the breakdowns, which I haven't been in that part of the industry. Do they still do that now with the parts that they're looking
Absolutely.
To cast?
Absolutely. They break it down. Every once in a while, if you're very, very lucky, and this does not happen often, your agent will try to find out. But most of the time, the casting director feels he doesn't owe you closure as to why you didn't get the part. Just know that, obviously, one guy is going to get it.
Right.
And there could be, like, five people who were the top contenders for that part. But one of the things that I say to my actors is, honestly, for over 25 years I've been teaching, and the people who stayed with it, who were diligent, who were tenacious, who did not stop, they start to book work eventually. And as they book work, they get better, they get stronger, and most of them actually will continue to do class until they're just a full-time working actor. But at the end of the day, if you go in and you do know what you're doing and you have delivered a great reading, there is something very gratifying from that. I understand that it can be frustrating not to book the part. But there's something gratifying that keeps you whole as an actor while you're in that process of getting up and running to be a working actor.
And Lynette, since you've been doing it for 25 years, you know more than anybody about the rejection. Because you see it with your students, I would imagine.
Sure.
And
sure.
That's why I think, and this is just a pedestrian opinion, that they have to have huge egos because a normal human being cannot withstand that amount of rejection without being wounded.
Well, yes, I mean, definitely you do need to have a good dose of ego, but I think more than that is that you really have to have a huge intention and urge to act so that no matter what does come your way, you are willing and able to push through it. You look at a lot of people, you'll see actors interviewed, and they say, well, you know, really, I couldn't do anything else. This is just really what I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that there was a choice. I wanted this more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's fast forward to your event, which is a week from tomorrow, June 8th.
Right, on a Saturday. Exactly. I'm giving a free seminar, and it happens to be on audition. So it is open to the public, and people do need to make a reservation for it. It is limited seating, but basically I'm going to be covering the top five things that you have to cover when you go into an audition. And then we're asking people to bring a short, say, two-page scene that they would like to read so that I can look at their work and talk to them about what they're doing right, but where they need to improve.
Oh, wow. So it's going to be hands-on, and they can bring tools, and you're going to show them how to sharpen them.
Exactly.
So how do they register?
They would call 310-274-1085 to make a reservation.
Okay.
If they visit the website, they can contact us through the website.
Which is?
Is www.LynetteMcNeilStudio.com.
And we'll post that information on the website when we post the podcast. So folks can reference that because not everybody listens live and they download on demand. So, Lynette, what is your journey with the profession of acting?
What is my journey?
Mm-hmm. How did you get it into the business and why?
Well, funnily enough, I grew up in a small town in Kansas. And when I was about 9 years old, a woman who taught at a local college had heard that I did all these school programs and plays and called my mother and said, I've heard about your daughter, and if she would like to take private coaching, I'd like to work with her. So I was taking piano lessons at the time, and my mother said, which would you like to do? Would you like to continue with your piano, or would you like to do private coaching? I said, I want to do the private coaching. So that's how I started, and I studied acting all the way through high school and graduated with a BA in theater from college. But toward the end of that time in college, I became interested in directing, and that's really how I started into teaching, because directing and teaching do kind of align with each other, and that's how all that started.
So you didn't want to continue to pursuing the craft and art of acting?
I really didn't. I mean, I did move to California, and I started that, but I was also teaching at the time, and the teaching just really was a stronger thing, and that's the road that I took.
Because I marvel at, like, I think, let's say, Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman, for example, from the Cheers fame. Mm-hmm. If I had been in their life and they said they wanted to be actors, I would think to myself, what are you, you're short, you're overweight, you're character, maybe, you're like, really? So it's, what's interesting is that you don't have to be willowy, blonde, and long-legged.
Exactly, because honestly, that gets so boring. There's not always a lot of life there. And those two are amazingly talented and creative and interesting people. So whatever they bring to the work, it's going to be pretty amazing. So you're absolutely right. You can look at somebody and go, really, that's never going to happen.
Right.
But that's sort of the short-sighted view of it once you realize, oh, but what they bring. And the odds of that, honestly, of both of them having the careers that they've had, just on a visual thought, like, well, that, how can that be? Because we look at television and we look at film and it's all about something else. But when you look a little bit further and you go, oh, but how interesting is that and how wonderful and rich are those two people as artists.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you, Lynette, if somebody comes to you, can you be honest and say you don't really have the talent? Or is it if they have the passion and the ambition and the drive, can someone, like a mold of clay, can you make a pot out of them or a vase? Or?
You know what? They make their own pot. I'm just there to fan the flame and provide them with the tools. But I don't step in and say, you know what, you should never do this. The only time I would say to somebody, I don't know if you really are going to do this, would be because they didn't have the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really show up and put the time and the creative energy in that was necessary. But somebody, it's too often, when I started teaching, I saw people that you might sort of think to yourself, I'm not sure how this is going to work out in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
That because they were so persistent, because they had to do it, because their intention was so strong, and they did have a great work ethic, they did it. They pulled it off.
Show up
so
prepared.
I have found it's not really my place to step in and say to somebody, you know, you're never going to work. It's just never going to happen because I don't think you're the right type, and I don't think you have the talent. Too many people have surprised me. That's not really my job. My job is to supply them with the tools, to give them every single piece of information that I have to help pave the way for them to have a great career. And then the rest is up to them. Some people start an acting class, and at a certain point they'll go, you know, I think I would do better as a director. I start to feel like I have more sensibilities in that area. I have students who go on to become very famous, you know, directors and producers.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were good actors, but they kind of gravitated toward that end and have had huge careers as that. And in either case, you will always, always be a better director and a better producer if you know what it takes to be a good actor.
Well, that was the philosophy which I shared with you when I started my master's in theater arts. And I was the emphasis was in script writing, and they said to us, if you're going to ask of an actor to do something, you need to know what that means. And so I took my one and only acting class, and that, boy, was that interesting.
Exactly right, yes.
Well, Lynette, we're out of time. I wanted to thank you for the conversation, and good luck with the June 8th event, and we will post that on our website as well.
Thank you. It was great to talk to you.
And to you. Take care. Okay. Lynette McNeil Studios, and again, we will have that on our website. Our time is up. Our week is up. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Maria Sanchez. Have a great weekend. We look forward to visiting with you on Monday morning.
Thank you for listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. Live every weekday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific, and on the net at LATalkRadio.com and MariaSanchezShow.com.